last time I took a road trip? How many national parks could I hit in 2 weeks? What about hotels? Wait, hey, Erica, how much am I spending on travel?
When your questions about life turn into questions about money, there's Erica, the virtual financial assistant to help you spend, save, and plan smarter. Only from Bank of America. What would you like the power to do? Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Your chat may be recorded and monitored for quality assurance. Message and data rates and additional terms may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Drilling Deep. I'm your host, John Kingston. We're the place in Freightways where we talk about diesel and oil. Got to drill for oil to get it. So that's why we call the show Drilling Deep. And then we talk about whatever we feel like talking about. This week, we're going to speak with Mike Roth. He's been here before with us at Drilling Deep. He is the head of the North American Council for Freight Efficiency. And they've been getting results in from their latest run-on list test of various technologies and techniques to improve fuel efficiency. He's going to be here with us in a few minutes and talk about some of the results of their test this year, which focused on battery electric vehicles. Last Friday, when the prior edition of Drilling Deep dropped, ultra-low sulfur diesel on the CME commodity exchange settled that day at a little more than $3.36 per gallon. Today, as I record this, it dropped below $3 per gallon for the first time since the end of July. It really has been a stunning decline. So let's talk about why. It seems like just a week ago that diesel was going to rise forever. Of course, nothing ever rises forever, but you know, sometimes you get that feeling. And if you're listening to this, you're probably wondering why you haven't seen much more of this move at the pump, and you haven't. As I've noted before, whether it's on the way up or the way down, retailers are not really set up to deal with the kind of big, wild swings that we're seeing right now in wholesale markets, because the wholesale markets will track the futures markets pretty closely. Those wholesale markets are keying off what is going on in futures and spot markets. Retailers are just not of the mindset to go up 7 cents one day and down 11 cents the next. Retail prices really, not just for diesel, but for gasoline too, are the ultimate lagging indicator. What has happened in this market? So much, but I'd say right now, let's talk about the fact that markets are tied to macroeconomics, and those macroeconomics have been gripped this past week with concerns about higher interest rates as the 10-year U.S. note has plummeted, sending interest rates higher. Higher interest rates means that holding inventories gets pretty expensive. And yes, we've talked about concerns about low diesel inventories going into winter as a reason why prices would go higher. It's still a factor. U.S. inventories in the most recent report did fall somewhat. Not a lot, but they're still very tight. But at a certain point, the desire to avoid building inventories becomes a drag on demand. Inventories tie up capital, and those higher interest rates are a real discouragement to putting stocks into storage. That's definitely a factor in the decline in diesel prices this week. Let's stop right here and note that it isn't just diesel dropping. Brent crude, the world benchmark, is solidly below $90 per barrel just a few days after it seemed that $100 was inevitable. That's going to bring down diesel as well. But diesel is falling faster than Brent. The spread between the two this week, when comparing just on a front-month-to-front-month basis, fell under $1 per gallon. In the past few weeks, it's been over $1.20 a few times. So you can see how dramatically diesel has weakened relative to crude. On an outright basis, it is Thursday as I record this, and at the price of ultra-low sulfur diesel on the CME at 9:30 this morning, turned out to be the settlement, it will be down 46 cents per gallon since last Friday. When will that show up in retail diesel prices? Again, that sort of drop in futures markets with that fast does not do well in terms of showing up at the pump quickly. It's frustrating to consumers, but wholesale numbers do come down roughly in tandem with futures prices. So yeah, there's likely to be a windfall for retailers in the next few days or even weeks. But there are times when things are reversed and the retailers get hammered. So it all sort of balances out at the end. It's really incredible how much the outlook on demand has changed in just the last few weeks. Not diesel demand so much, but world petroleum demand in general. The markets seem to really be latching on to the idea that higher interest rates are going to severely crimp economic growth, and with it, oil demand will sink. The weekly EIA numbers this week seem to show a sharp downturn in gasoline demand in the U.S., though the online chatter was that there was some indication that that might have been an outlier. Let's face it, the idea of central banks has been, or the goal of central banks, has been to drive up interest rate, so to slow economic activity, and put inflation in check. It is possible that we're at that point. If so, oil is not going to be exempt from the slowdown. They're seeing that in the price. Hey, moving on here now on Drilling Deep. We've had Mike Roth here as a guest before. I think this is the first time since we went video that we've had him, at least a couple of times going back when we were audio only. And while it's easy to think of diesel whenever you think about the North American Council for Freight Efficiency, which he heads, it's starting to broaden its research into electric vehicles. That is one of the things we want to talk about him today. So anyway, Mike, welcome back to Drilling Deep.
Yeah, thanks, John. It's fun to be here. Yeah, and you know, we talk about freight in terms of all the way down, I guess you will, to e-commerce vans, class three, all the way up to class eight tractor trailers across Canada, the U.S., and Mexico. So, it's fairly broad. A lot of different applications, truck sizes, regulations, lots of things to deal with in moving freight around the region.
Let's first talk. Why don't you give kind of a summary of what your group does, the NACFE?
Yeah, so we were started in 2009. Really, the spark to start us was high fuel prices. I mean, if you just look, there were decades we were down around $1, $1.50, and then it was like this, oh my God, moment for the industry.
For July 3rd, 2008, all-time high in the price of West Texas Intermediate.
There you go. So, and I would combine the cost with the realization that why not work on fuel from a cost perspective? But a lot of people thought, well, rates will go up when fuel prices are high. We got this surcharge thing. And it was really a time where fuel prices went up and the industry recognized, let's work on the cost side. So, over the decade or so we've been at it, we've seen trucks go from, the best out there go from 7-8 mile per gallon hauling freight all the way up to, 10-11. We've got super trucks from the truck manufacturers that are doing 14-15-16. So that along with the greenhouse gas regulations that have been sort of a push, as well as various different polls, and diesel's become a lot better. We noticed, in the end of the last decade that, I wasn't going to stop there. And this zero emission freight movement, or sometimes we call it decarbonizing, I mean, it has come faster than I thought. And it's just not the regulators. I mean, it's the public, corporations wanting more, responsible freight movement, I'll call it. I mean, maybe that's a little blunt, but decarbonizing moving freight. And that's how NACFE got involved really in 2017 with electric trucks, and now hydrogen trucks, and everything between sort of petroleum diesel up to and including these zero emission alternatives that are really becoming. If I look at myself, even in the mirror, John, I'm surprised how well these battery electric trucks do, even in long distance hauling.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit. So your various programs, I guess, I don't know whether to call it an annual program or an ongoing program. It's been called Run On Less, and that the whole idea is to see how far you can run on less fuel. And your recent initiative, and I guess it's ongoing, you can talk about it, is called Run On Less Electric Depot. So obviously it has electric BEVs, battery electric vehicles, at its heart. Where's that program stand? Has it been completed? I know it launched recently. Is it still ongoing?
Yeah, so it's kind of done. I'll explain, John. We do these every 2 years. It started with in 2016, basically the team I run saying, I wonder what the best of the best is out there. These truckers are bragging about their fuel economy like people brag about their weight and golf scores. So we went out and sought to find out, and we did one in 17 and 19, almost exclusively on diesels. We had one natural gas truck in 2019, and then in 21, and now in 23, we focus solely on battery electric vehicles or battery electric trucks. And there we went down to class three. So it's been a huge learning experience over the last few years, going really quite bluntly from, hey, are these things like Bigfoots or Sasquatches? We hear about them, but they're probably not really there, to yes, they're here. and in small trucks, vans, step vans, medium duty box trucks, and even short distance urban heavy duty tractors, they're really getting the job done and doing quite well. Now there's a lot of things to keep working on. I'm sure we'll get into it, but they are so simple truck architecture, you know, batteries, motors, electronics, and you go. You don't, you know, no after treatment, much less moving parts, just very simple technology in a, you know, in a business that's gotten really complex with these diesel engines and then looking at things like hybridization and natural gas and other things. You know, these are really pretty complex trucks, and battery electric trucks sort of simplify all that.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until...
The Singapore presentation is at
3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
That's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Right now, so you went up, did you say, I couldn't tell whether you said you went down to class three or up to class three. So were there any class eight vehicles in the test?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So here in 2023, it's about depots. So this is about scaling. We went and sought eight places in North America where there were 15 or more electric trucks. And what we found was, and convinced, 10 fleets. These are generally the big fleets, UPS, Penske, Schneider, but also, Pepsi and so forth, but also one or two smaller fleets, like a company called OK Produce in Fresno, who are already at 20% of their class eight fleet out of their site, being battery electric trucks. So we have a handful of things like 4D Transits, GM BrightDrop, Freightliner custom chassis, small vehicles like you'd see in e-commerce and, other sort of inner city urban deliveries. And then up through one box truck. And then, we've got a lot of heavy duty tractors from the traditional manufacturers like Freightliner and Volvo, but also from BYD, Nikola, and Tesla who joined the run. So the focus this time was how do you go from like one or two trucks at a site to 15 or as much as 82? One of the sites, a Schneider, you know, you think Schneider, right? Truckload carrier, no way are they looking at electric trucks. Well, they have 82. E-Cascadia is operating right now with only 10 diesels augmenting it in a very classic intermodal drayage operation, moving to the rail yards and the warehouses across Southern California. And they're making it happen with a truck that, you know, an E-Cascadia that's kind of limited in range to about 230 miles per charge. But they're getting multiple charges in per shift. They're figuring out how to use that truck in a way that continues to still meet the needs of what they're doing. So a lot of class eights, including the Tesla Semi, which put up some huge numbers.
Well, let's talk about where the test was. Did all these vehicles return to the depot at night, or were these, did any of them make sort of traditional over-the-road runs, or where the driver stops for the night and sleeps in the sleeper cab?
Well, let me say first, John, that these were real trucks, real freight, real routes. None of this is made up. This isn't like a marketing test or, you know, we loaded it with X amount of concrete blocks. This is real freight at these locations. So they're all moving goods like they normally would had run on less not been there, basically that. And so there were not any long haul disparate route truckload kind of runs here. This is all pretty much return to base. So a lot of day cabs, even small trucks and vans and step vans and urban delivery. When we get up into the heavy duty tractors, though, I would say, you know, we segment the market here at NACFI in, what you just described, sort of the what we like to call long haul disparate routes. And then we also say that heavy tractors are also put into return to base, typically decab, but not always, but return to base. And we have return to base in three segments, short, medium, and long. So for the long regional haul return to base heavy duty tractors, a lot like LTL and some other things. They do long distances, and, you know, battery electric trucks have been viewed as not appropriate for that segment, and that will have to go hydrogen or stay diesel or something. One of the big learnings we've had here is I'm not so sure about that. We aren't either. So this return to base makes the electric truck, or really any of these alternative fuels, a lot simpler because they come back to a site where you can put the infrastructure there. So all 10 of these sites have put in place charging at the sites. In some cases, if the truck stays there all night and only runs one shift, it's relatively slow charging because, you know, it gets back and it has 10 or 11 hours to charge. The cheaper the charger, the cheaper the equipment that you put in place, the less demand on the utility, and quite frankly, have ability to then charge when the electricity is cheaper. But as we get up into slip seat operations of these, medium and long haul, then becomes more challenging. And so you need faster charging and so forth. So what we've kind of found in the run, we watched 22 trucks at these 10 sites, and we pushed detailed data to the dashboard. And quite honestly, a lot of people look at us and go, how did you get, Penske and Pepsi and all these companies to allow you to get this kind of level of detail? I mean, it's like state of charge over the day, and when it charged, what did the charge curves look like? And it's pretty detailed data. But they did it to help the industry. They know they're the early adopters, and they want the industry to move faster and learn quicker. So they did it. So in these smaller depots with shorter routes, electrification is really quite a good option right now. You don't need as much utility discussions and support. The trucks are smaller, cheaper. They tend to not operate overnight. For the longer return to base, I got to tell you, with this run, I think battery electric trucks can do the job in more of the market than we thought going in because of what we're seeing with fast charging and, bigger battery packs and the efficiency of these vehicles to perform what they need to perform. They're not ready yet for the long haul disparate routes, and we don't have an infrastructure that can support it. But for those return to base long haul, we think it might be more of an option than we thought going in.
Right. So you're still talking about something that might be pulling a 53-foot trailer. It just isn't going over the road with an overnight stay.
Right. That's exactly right. I mean, it really is helpful for it to return to a known base to put that infrastructure in place. And then the fleet has control over that, the whole thing, the trucks, the charging, the freight, the drivers. They have control over where in the long haul, you really have to find the charging infrastructure, which isn't there.
Yeah. Now, what did you find in terms of cost? You would have done this at a time when diesel prices were relatively elevated. You open up by talking about times when the rates are high and the diesel prices are high along with it. We're in like kind of the really ugly spot right now with low per mile rates and high diesel prices. So what did you find in terms of the efficiency, not really just the physical efficiency, but the economic efficiency of switching out from kind of a higher cost diesel down to electricity, which is a fairly fixed cost? And, would the efficiency work if the diesel price was low as well?
Yeah. So for anybody that says, they know or they think they know the total cost of ownership of electric versus diesel and anything in this, heavy duty atmosphere, I say, you don't know. So we don't know yet, John. I mean, we can start to point to things we're starting to learn. I mean, right now, the trucks are pretty expensive. We have incentives that can help that, but the incentives aren't going to be there a long time. I submit the high truck costs are going to mitigate as we get to some scale, but also as we learn and understand how simple these powertrains are and how much less work it is to both build, maintain, and operate these trucks, that we'll see, cost, what we call here at NACTI, like difficult to monetize benefits. One that I talk about all the time is truck drivers. They love these trucks. I'm convinced that driver turnover will be lower when companies run electric trucks rather than diesel or natural gas or other trucks. I mean, they're just so easy to drive. And we've got many testimonials on the videos right now on this runonless.com where you can see what the drivers are saying about it. But there's others too. I mean, from just simpler maintenance facilities to some of these trucks go inside to get loaded. All of the e-commerce companies in the run, UPS, Purelators in the run, they go inside. And so, that has fumes as exhaust and people loading and unloading. And it gets hot in the summer, cold in the winter because doors are open, exhaust is going. So I could go on all day, but we're finding a lot of benefits in the total cost of ownership of these trucks that are very difficult to monetize. So resale value is another one that people bring up a lot. So there's just a bunch of things that we won't know for a while. But I would say, the total cost of ownership is looking better than when we thought coming in. The ability to do multiple charges in many of these duty cycles, either with returning to that base and getting another charge, not all the way up to 100%, but maybe just from 20 to 50% is really helpful. And then, before we get to truck stop electrification and infrastructure, we're going to have what some are calling electricity hubs, or even some just like in route charging. So some of these return to base, if it's 250 miles out, you might just simply be able to put a charger at that outbound place, have that driver charge there, relatively fast charging. I mean, we're talking about a megawatt charging, which means you can charge the biggest battery pack we know of right now in heavy duty in less than around 45 minutes. That's not that much longer than diesel. I mean, it is, but it's kind of manageable.
This episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, I should not bring up this analogy because one's a car and the other's a truck. But my brother-in-law did drive his Tesla from Florida to New York recently. And, of course, the Tesla system is such that it tells you where the next charger is. So that's great. Of course, there's no reason you can't have that in trucking as well. So he really didn't have any problem. The one thing that concerns me long term is, right now you have an infrastructure for refueling that is designed for kind of one way of doing it, the truck stop. The gas station, whatever. I get concerned about the ability to have enough capital for two recharging systems. One would be for electric charge and the other would be for hydrogen or diesel or something else, kind of to your point about, we're not ready for prime time on the long-term truck. So that's a concern that I have. I mean, you're talking about a significant amount of capital to support two charging systems. And that's one that I don't think gets brought up a lot, that is definitely a concern of mine.
No, and we share that. I mean, it's, I think we're going to go completely zero emission, even in freight. Let's just assume like vocational trucks and, Northern Canada logging is going to stay diesel. So let's don't say that all 100% are going to go electric or hydrogen, but just the over the road sort of, regional haul and sleeper trucks like we're talking about. I think we're going to end up with both if we're going to decarbonize and go to zero. So both electric and hydrogen fuel cell electric trucks. With that, then we're going to need some amount of infrastructure. Now, I think what's going to happen is, sort of in that middle, which is going to dominate. So is this going to be like 50-50? If we go out 30 years, I don't know, 25, 30 years, is this going to be 50%? Battery electric trucks and 50% hydrogen fuel cell, or more like what we're kind of thinking, like 90-10. So if it's 90-10 or 80-20, and I'm personally saying 80% electric and 20% hydrogen fuel cell electric, then maybe that's a different story where the hydrogen then needs to be in some very specific places. I think the EPA and the DOE, I should say, in their funding for hydrogen hubs, they're kind of going through that thinking right now with the whole industry. Okay, well, where would you put these hydrogen hubs? Where would you put those to limit the amount of hydrogen distribution you need to make? Because, there's tons of compare and contrast battery electric and hydrogen, right? One of the challenges of hydrogen is you have to transport it. You have to transport it in liquid form to make any sense. So you've got trucks and trailers and, you know, and so what's the distances that you're needing to do that? So the whole infrastructure point you're bringing up is huge. And it's going to depend not only on the infrastructure itself, but how far these trucks make sense and what that sort of mix of battery and hydrogen will be long term. Again, the battery truck is pretty simple. The infrastructure is actually straightforward as well, because, you know, we've been putting up skyscrapers and sports complexes. We kind of know what's going to need to happen to do a 10 megawatt trucking site, because we've done others. Now, we get all the discussion about brownouts and is the grid ready and all that, and, you know, what percent of the grid is coal and what percent is renewable. We can, of course, have all those discussions. But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to, for trucking, you know, what can the battery electric truck do and how far can it go to gain its relative simplicity against, a much more complex hydrogen fuel cell truck and the infrastructure that's needed as well. So that's kind of where we're at right now as we learn from the run and the other research that NACNY's been doing.
Now, let's talk about if you were able to calculate kind of a miles per gallon equivalent for this. Now, I'm not sure how you would do it. It would seem to me off the top of my head, let me give you my half-baked theory, that you would say, well, okay, we had to spend X amount of dollars to acquire the electricity to run it. That would buy you X number of gallons of diesel, which has an average rate of, let's say, 9 miles per gallon. I mean, did you do something like that?
So we've done that. And, you know, the MPG equivalent of a heavy electric truck is like two to two and a half times the diesel counterparts, so somewhere in the 18 mile per gallon piece. But there's so much there, right? So, you know, let me just use an absurd analogy. You've got school buses that, of course, we want to get emissions away from our kids. Even the clean diesels, we'd like to do that, but they use very little electricity. So the savings when you compare, you know, 30 miles a day or 50 miles a day on diesel versus electricity is kind of difficult. It's not a lot of savings there. So, and when you get up the bigger ones, so bigger trucks, it's, you know, quite different, of course. So, all of it kind of depends on the duty cycle, the situations at the locations. You know, some people are saying that electric trucks will only be on the coast forever, yet utility costs in Nebraska are pretty cheap. So maybe there's, places where, from a TCO standpoint, which every fleet manager in the country thinks about it, all of us in trucking have been, you know, just ingrained with pay attention to what it costs, because profits are lean and and difficult, and so we have that in our blood. So that will help us out a lot, make these different technologies successful, because quite frankly, diesel that we've known and loved is on its way out. Ultimately, because of what it's just doing. I mean, unfortunately, because it's been a great fuel, but this generation of fleet managers are the first to really start this transformation to something else.
Yeah, also another thing I think about total cost of operation, you know, everybody talks about the truck driver shortage. We at FreightWaves do not tend to believe in it, but regardless. And then the other big concern here is the diesel mechanic shortage. And I will never forget the first time I saw a diesel engine and a battery engine side by side. I mean, the contrast is real and staggering. And what is the total cost of operation? If you don't have to sweat hiring a diesel mechanic, you can hire a lot fewer battery engine mechanics and still get the job done.
An interesting thing that my team brought up as we were kind of almost brainstorming, what have we learned here? And it was around the people that we interviewed, 122 people at these 10 sites directly responsible, plus another 30 or 40 or 50 that we met. They're all like really into this and they're excited about it. And quite frankly, John, I mean, it was very diverse. 49% of the 122 people were either women or people of color. And so this is I think electric trucks and we also see this a bit in automation and some other of these technologies, just bringing some really smart, dedicated, passionate people into our industry. We've kind of fallen in, myself as well, we've kind of like, well, you know, we're just the trucking industry. Well, the trucking industry is now pretty cool, and it's got huge challenges. And so I do see, the people that have come into the industry that may not have been here if we were still doing, kind of the old way, really exciting. And, you know, I'm going to be at Women in Trucking in a month in Dallas. And, you know, we'll see just a lot of capable, exciting people there, like, on and on. So that makes me hopeful, because there's a ton of challenges making this happen.
Yeah, I attended the CERAWeek conference, which is the big energy conference. I mean, I've been going to it since the 90s. And I went to it last year in Houston in March. And in fact, I just signed up today, this morning, to go next year. And the one thing about it, you know, you could talk about hydrogen. First of all, the meeting, the joke was they should turn it into a hydrogen meeting, okay, because that's all they talked about. And what really strikes you is the brain power going into this. It is significant.
Yeah, it is. You really, it's not like, I don't see it as a, you know, a short-term thing. I mean, I think it's, the group doesn't want to just show it can be done. Like, you know, the last few weeks I've been talking that, you know, Run on Less was showing the art of the probable, not the art of the possible. It's not like, you know, research and like engineering things. These are real production level trucks being operated by fleets in a way to make them as successful as we can with limited range and longer fuel time. And if one thing I've learned in our industry in 35 years is that, you know, throw us the challenge. We may not like it, but we'll figure it out, because at the end of the day, we got to move the goods, right? Or like my friend at Rakesh at Daimler says, if we don't do that, we'll all be sitting around hungry and naked. And so we take that responsibility, you know, extremely seriously in this industry, and then we'll figure it out. And I think the Run on Less, you can see it right now at runonless.com. These are 10 places that are quote unquote figuring it out.
Well, Mike, I could talk to you about this all day, but we're going to have to bring it down to a close. So anyway, I want to thank Mike Roth talking about Run on Less. He's with the North American Council for Freight Efficiency. If there was a takeaway number from this, 18 miles per gallon is a pretty good number, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, we had one truck that did 1,076 miles in 24 hours. They did 400 miles on a stated charge. I mean, those numbers for all of us doing this work, we're like, oh my God, you know, maybe this is a bigger part of the industry and quicker than we thought. Of course, a lot of the challenges that we've talked about in the time we've had together. But, you know, it's here, it's real, and we'll see how far and how fast it goes.
And we're glad that you've been here. So anyway, Mike Roth, thanks for joining us here today on Drilling Deep. You've been watching Drilling Deep. We are part of the Freight, or just listening to it. You could be watching it, you could be listening to it. We are part of the FreightCast family of podcasts from FreightWaves. You can find us on all the leading podcast platforms as well as YouTube. I've been your host, John Kingston, and please join us again.